Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So today, this morning, we are going to read from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, chapter titled A Resident of Vrindavan. One night, Abai had a striking dream, the same dream he had had several times before during his days as a householder. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati appeared just as Abai had known him, the tall, scholarly sannyasi coming directly from the spiritual world, from Krishna's personal entourage. He called to Abai and indicated that he should follow. Repeatedly he called and motioned. He was asking Abai to take sannyas. Come, he urged, become a sannyasi. So this is when Srila Prabhupada had left home, am I right? Yes, I think.
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
When Srila Prabhupada had left home and was living in Vrindavan, I guess, a resident of Vrindavan. And having just extricated himself from his somewhat difficult household situation. His wife was not really a devotee, and sometimes she was negatively minded towards Krishna consciousness and devotees. For example, sometimes Prabhupada would invite, after he had met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and became involved with the Gaudiya Math and was visiting the temples and doing like that regularly and practicing regularly, sometimes Srila Prabhupada would invite the devotees for a house program, as our devotees also do from time to time. Just invite everyone and invite some of the, like the sadhus, to one's home, and then have a program, kirtan, Krishna katha, prasadam, like that. So Srila Prabhupada would do that. And some devotees and friends would gather. Some devotees would come from the temple. Perhaps a sannyasi would come also, and they'd have a program, just basically as we do. His wife would stay in the bedroom at the back. She would not come and participate. So it was not easy for Srila Prabhupada at the best of times. Anyway, he then left home. And now here he is having this dream, which, as is mentioned here, he had had several times before, this type of dream. His spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, appearing in the dream, a very vivid dream, and encouraging him strongly, come with me. Take sannyas, become fully absorbed in devotional service, and don't just sort of tarry unnecessarily in your, you know, spiritually very unproductive household life. Even you may recall that, well, in Durban, the devotees are reading the same volume of Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, but they're some little bit earlier on. And I think so. Yeah. And we read just a few weeks ago when Srila Prabhupada first met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, yeah, when he first met him, and he and his cousin came to the place on the urging, actually, of his cousin, and then they went up. The program was on the roof, and they just came up and just offered obeisances. Prabhupada had never seen Srila Bhaktisiddhanta before in his life. His cousin had. And so they offered obeisances, as was the practice. They're from Vaishnava family. And now they're just sitting back up, coming back up from offering obeisances. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, "You are both, not just Prabhupada, but you are both educated young men. You should preach Krishna consciousness all over the world." And Srila Prabhupada was just really taken aback by that, because they had not even introduced themselves to each other or anything at all. Literally nothing. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is apparently ordering, not just suggesting or some idea or something like that, but he's saying, "You are educated young men. You should preach Krishna consciousness all over the world." So then there's a description of what happened there in that their interaction, the exchange they had. But basically what happened, at least at the end, Srila Prabhupada was so much affected and impressed with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that Prabhupada said he immediately accepted him as his spiritual master in his heart. And Prabhupada then, as he walked away after the program had concluded, Srila Prabhupada thought to himself, "What a shame I'm married." He had only been married for, I'm not exactly sure how long, but not long at all. He may have been in his mid-20s, 26 perhaps, something like that. And Srila Prabhupada thought, what a shame that I'm married. This person, this is just so wonderful and so impressive and so convincing. I feel like I would just like to give my life to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and to Krishna consciousness, but I can't as a fairly newly married young man. So Prabhupada thought that he saw there were quite a number of brahmacharis, a few sannyasis there, and they were unmarried people, and they were fully engaged and doing what he could see was such an invaluable activity of such unique importance. So he felt like that. I would like to just give up everything and just take fully to it, to Krishna consciousness, under the shelter of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, but he couldn't. So, yes, then during the course of his household life, sometimes he would have the same dream being described here. And Prabhupada said, it's here in the text. Prabhupada said he would wake up feeling bad. That, how can I do this? It seems I'm being called on a higher level. It's not just some sort of mental thing. I'm actually being called to do this, but how could I do it? Yes. So, anyway, let's see now. Abai awoke in a state of wonder. He thought of this instruction as another feature of the original instruction Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had given him at their first meeting in Calcutta, the same instruction that his spiritual master had later solidified in a letter. Become an English preacher and spread Krishna consciousness throughout the Western world. Sannyas was for that end. Otherwise, why would his spiritual master have asked him to accept it? By reason that his spiritual master was saying, now take sannyas and you will actually be able to accomplish this mission. Formerly, the time was not right. So Srila Prabhupada, even though his household situation, it was not like, you know, a nice ISKCON Grihastha situation. We have so many devotees who are Grihasthas just in and around Johannesburg, Pretoria area. There's so many. And many of them are very, very nice, both husband and wife, very nice, dedicated devotees who take it very seriously and really want to be Krishna conscious and maintain the standards, etc. Prabhupada's household situation had not been so nice. Although his wife was, in a sort of broad sense of the term, a type of a devotee or something along those lines. She was from a devotee family. Srila Prabhupada's father was very staunch devotee. He was really very amazing devotee, actually. And Srila Prabhupada appreciated him tremendously. So, you may have read, his father wanted him to marry a particular girl who was from another devotee family. Srila Prabhupada had another girl in mind. Such is life. And he sort of tried to negotiate with his father that the other girl, she's nicer. You know, he was more sort of attracted, he appreciated her more. But the girl his father wanted him to marry, who he did marry, he didn't find so interesting. And his father told him, no, don't marry the other girl. And what was it like? Something like, It's sort of healthy if you're not like too attracted towards your wife. Oh dear. Anyway. So, but my point was, Srila Prabhupada was a very dutiful householder. He really was. And, you know, even in ISKCON in the very early days, like, say, the very early 70s, there were some devotees who they wanted to take sannyas. We mentioned yesterday in our seminar. And they did. Prabhupada allowed them, even though they were really quite young. And there were also, amongst those, there were some who were married. And some of them had become married since becoming devotees. So they had not been married a long time. You know, there were some who were married already. They became devotees. But some, they married devotees, initiated devotees. And so, but some of them, they decided they wanted to take sannyas because it just became this whole sociological phenomenon, particularly in America, that, you know, you should take sannyas. It's the right thing to do. Brahmacharis should take sannyas now. So some of the householders decided, like Tamal Krishna Goswami was one. A devotee called Gurudas was another. And there were a few others, some others. They just decided they wanted to take sannyas. Even though they had married devotees, like real practicing devotees, and just quite recently. And Prabhupada, after being sort of almost pestered by them, he allowed a few of them to do it. But Prabhupada himself was a very dutiful householder. Even though he was just staunchly committed to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta from the outset, from the first day, first meeting. And even though he had these dreams from time to time, it was like the same dream. So it's like, it's a message. It's not just some sort of tamagun, sleep time hallucination, which many dreams are. The same dream, very Krishna conscious, again and again. Yeah. But still, he stuck with his family until he was more than 50 years old. If I remember correctly, 56, something like that. And then only just when his wife just became too much, she sold his Srimad Bhagavatam to buy tea. And Prabhupada said to her, either before or after that particular incident, Prabhupada said, listen, it's either tea or me. And his wife, thinking it was just, you know, one of these little household things that happen sometimes, she just said, oh, I'll take the tea. The next morning she woke up, Prabhupada was not there. And first of all, they didn't know. They thought something had happened. They didn't know. He was like a missing person for a little while until they found out he had gone somewhere and moved into a temple. But even Prabhupada, actually, like I say, he got kind of pestered in a nice Krishna conscious way, but it was still a bit sort of, you know, not maybe exactly the ideal way to deal with the spiritual master. He allowed some devotees to take sannyas, but some he didn't. There's one devotee, you may have heard of him, I don't know if any of you have met him, Tejas Prabhu. He's still active in Prabhupada's movement. He's a really nice devotee. And he was temple president in Delhi, India, when Srila Prabhupada was on the planet. Maybe the whole time at least from the time that devotees went to India, he was temple president in Delhi and very, very staunch devotee. And he married a devotee who was, a serious, committed lady in Krishna consciousness. But then he was pressurized by people like Tamal Krishna Goswami, who was the main one who had pestered Prabhupada, who had been married. And he pushed Prabhupada, and Prabhupada let him take sannyas. So Tamal Krishna Goswami and others were pushing Tejas. Come on, you should take sannyas. Then you can really preach. So Tejas went to Srila Prabhupada and sat down and said, Srila Prabhupada, I want to take sannyas. And Prabhupada said, why? You just married a nice devotee. Why? And then Tejas tried to give a few reasons. And Prabhupada was just not into it. And there's this big bowl of fruit on Prabhupada's table. Prabhupada said, anyway, look, here, take some prasad. And Prabhupada started preaching to him about, being a Krishna conscious householder and how you can be fully Krishna conscious, etc. And then Prabhupada took another, these are like whole fruits. And Prabhupada said, here, take some more prasad. And Prabhupada preached more. And then Prabhupada said, here, take some more prasad. So now Tejas's hand was full. And then Prabhupada said, here, take some more prasad. He had to use two hands. Mm-hmm. And eventually Prabhupada was just going on and on preaching to him and giving him every couple of minutes another piece of fruit prasad, that Tejas's hands were overflowing. So then that finished. This was in Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada that afternoon had a darshan in his main front room in his house in Vrindavan. And there are many devotees there. It's quite packed. And Tejas Prabhu came in. And he's looking, where's their place? There's just no place to sit. Then he saw one place in the front, almost right in the front. So he started trying to quietly make his way through the devotees. And as he did, he was like, now he's in the middle of the room. He's approaching that spot where he can sit down. And Prabhupada looked up. And Prabhupada said, ah, Tejas Maharaj. And everyone looked at him. Tejas told us that story once. And Prabhupada once, because Tejas was temple president in Delhi, and he would go out every day. He was never in the temple. He'd sometimes stay overnight at the houses of people he was preaching to, trying to get them to become life members and donate. And one time he was with Prabhupada and they met some big important man. And Prabhupada said to the man, yes, this is our temple president, Tejas. He is very intelligent. He has big ears. He doesn't really have that big ears, but Prabhupada said that. Abai deliberated, so Tejas never took sannyas to this day, but he's actively engaged in ISKCON. Abai deliberated cautiously. By accepting sannyas, a Vaishnav dedicates his body, mind, and words totally to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, renouncing all other engagements. He was doing that already. Srila Bhakti, because now Prabhupada's left home. He's a vanaprastha. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had offered sannyas to his leading disciples so that they could continue his mission. They hadn't done it. They hadn't continued his mission. Preaching in the West had proved perilous, even for the Gaudiya Mutt's most recognized sannyasis. How could he? Because, you know, they went, there's a few of them went, Bon Maharaj, and at least one other, maybe two or something like that, others. They went, and they did some preaching, sort of. But they couldn't even sort of stimulate people enough to collect enough money to maintain their living expenses. You know, some place to live and food and so on. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had to send money from India. And you know, nowadays India, of course, is quite a different place financially. But in those days, India was really a poor country. But now, and England is sort of like, was like America is now. It was the top place on the planet, financially, richest country. They had to send money from India to England so these devotees could carry on their preaching or whatever they were trying to do. Yes. Preaching in the West had proved perilous even for the Gaudiya Mutt's most recognized sannyasis. How could he, a mere householder, presume he could succeed where the others had failed? Prabhupada talked about that. At least he talked about when he went to go to, or was thinking of going to America, Prabhupada thought to himself that I had a godbrother or two. They went to England to preach and they failed. Then I had another godbrother. He went to Germany, because some devotee went to Germany. It's like 1933, just around the time Hitler came into power and Germany became like this most bizarre place. So he went there to try to preach anyway. And so Prabhupada thought, yeah. So I had my godbrothers, they went to England, they tried to preach, they failed. Then I had a godbrother, he went to Germany, tried to preach, he failed. Prabhupada was telling his disciples. Prabhupada said, so I thought, at least I'll go to America. If I'm going to fail, let me fail in a different place. He was hesitant. The helpless, incapable feeling he had expressed in his Viraha Ashtaka was there. But now his spiritual master was beckoning him over all other considerations, even over natural humility. Now, although he was elderly and alone, the desire to preach, just as his spiritual master had preached, remained within him. A fierce, though sometimes quietly expressed, determination. the Vedic standard and the example set by the previous acharyas was that if one wanted to lead a preaching movement, sannyas was required. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had taken sannyas to facilitate his missionary work. Lord Chaitanya had taken sannyas to further the Sankirtan movement. Of course, Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but when his young students had been disrespectful towards him, treating him as an ordinary man, he had taken sannyas. Because a sannyasi is automatically respected, Lord Chaitanya's acceptance of sannyas was a calculated tactic. As soon as he began traveling throughout India as a sannyasi, he immediately attracted thousands of followers to the Sankirtan movement. Knowing that many cheaters would accept the saffron dress and abuse the respect given to sannyasis, Lord Chaitanya had advised against accepting sannyas in the age of Kali. He knew that cheaters in the guise of sadhus would act immorally, accumulate funds for their own sense gratification, and make many followers simply to enhance their own prestige. Posing as swamis, they would cheat the public. Because the people in Kali Yuga are unable to follow the rules and regulations of sannyas, Lord Chaitanya had recommended that they simply chant Hare Krishna. However, if a person could actually follow the rules, and especially if he had to spread the Sankirtan movement, sannyas was necessary. Abai first had to approach one of his godbrothers for permission. He decided to turn to Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj, formerly Kunjabi Hari, the leader of the Chaitanya Math in Calcutta. Abai still thought of the Chaitanya Math as the headquarters of his spiritual master's mission. During the heated legal disputes, the Chaitanya Math had been the most prized acquisition, and since 1948, it had been under the legal ownership of Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj. Now, although each sannyasi had his own place or places, the Chaitanya Math and Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj legally represented the Gaudiya Math entity. Abai felt that if he were to take sannyas and go preach in America, he should give the Chaitanya Math the first opportunity to support his work. In April 1959, Abai wrote to Tirtha Maharaj, inquiring about sannyas, as well as about the Chaitanya Math's printing some of his manuscripts. And since no one was going abroad, he volunteered to do so on behalf of the Chaitanya Math. Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj replied that Abai should first join the Chaitanya Math. He mentioned the strife that still lingered. Those who are acting against Chaitanya Math, they are motivated by their individual ambitions. Unquote. Anyone who was against the Chaitanya Math, he said, was acting illogically and against the instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So according to Tirtha Maharaj, the thing for Abai to do, the thing he had neglected to do for so many years, was to join the Chaitanya Math and act under his direction. Tirtha Maharaj mentioned several members of the Chaitanya Math who had recently accepted the sannyas order, and he said that Abai could also become one in time. He invited Abai to come reside at the Chaitanya Math. The houses that we have, there are rooms that are airy and well lit. We will treat you exclusively. There won't be any difficulty. We will take care that no inconveniences are caused. But as for printing books, quote, we're eagerly awaiting to print the books like Satsandarbha Vedanta, based on devotional service, and many other rare books by the Goswamis. First we will print them. Books written by you will be checked by the editorial staff And if the funds can be raised, then they can be printed according to priority. The books will be printed only if they're favorable for the service of the Chaitanya Math. Therefore, if the fund is raised, then there is a plan to go abroad also. Unquote. Abai was not encouraged. The main difficulty he felt was the Chaitanya Math's shortage of funds. Srila Prabhupada: I was working with my broken typewriter. I went to our Tirtha Maharaj. You give me a room and print my books. Give me some money. I will join you. I had thought, this is Guru Maharaj's institution. But he did not say no. But the printing of books was a difficult task for him. He had no money. He was hardly collecting for maintaining. Printing of books is a big job, and there is no guarantee of sale. Unquote. Without printing books and going to the West, sannyas did not have meaning for Abai. And who knew when Tirtha Maharaj would sanction his taking sannyas? There was no point in going to Calcutta just to reside in an airy, well-lit room that he already had in Vrindavan. Abai wrote back to Tirtha Maharaj, mentioning his direct order from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to preach to the English-speaking people. He wanted to go to the West right away, and he had thought the Chaitanya Math would welcome his offer. Both Abai and Tirtha Maharaj had their responsibilities, but perhaps they could work together to carry out the desire of their spiritual master. Abai asked Tirtha Maharaj to reconsider. On May the 7th, 1959, Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj wrote back, quote, "My suggestion is, don't make any hasty decisions. For the time being, you stay with us and engage yourself in the service of the society, and then accept Tridanda sannyas. The purpose of accepting Tridanda is to serve the society. If that is your desire, then Sri Chaitanya Math will decide about your going to America to preach and make all the arrangements. It can never be the principle of the society to let one act according to his individual attempt or desire. The society will decide after consulting with the heads what is to be done by whom. This is what I want to say. First of all, it is necessary to identify oneself with the society. In order to preach in America or in other foreign countries, it is important to have a dignified organization in the background. And secondly, it is necessary to establish oneself in India before going to preach in the foreign countries. Now it is that there are no conferences or meetings in the West as before. Communication is done through the media of television." 1959. Abai could understand the needs and priorities of the Chaitanya Math, but he could not allow them to overrule what he considered the highest mandate, preaching, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had ordered. Abai had offered his services to the leaders of the Chaitanya Math, thinking they might also see things his way. He thought that with the world's crying need for Krishna consciousness staring them in the face, they might see that this Abai Babu was convinced and enthusiastic, and so should be sent right away with whatever he required. But they had other priorities. Abai next turned to Keshava Maharaj in Mathura, and Keshava Maharaj told Abai to take sannyas immediately. After corresponding with Tirtha Maharaj, Abai had felt some uncertainty about accepting sannyas, and now that he was being encouraged so strongly, he resisted. But Keshava Maharaj was insistent. Srila Prabhupada: "I was sitting alone in Vrindavan writing. My godbrother insisted to me, 'Bhaktivedanta Prabhu, you must do it. Without accepting the renounced order of life, nobody can become a preacher.' So he insisted. Not he insisted. Practically, my spiritual master insisted. He wanted me to become a preacher, so he forced me through this godbrother. You accept. So, unwillingly, I accepted. Let me just read this rest of this chapter. Keshavji Gaudiya Math was located in the midst of one of Mathura's downtown bazaars. Its main entrance, an arched doorway, led into a courtyard open to the sky through a metal grating above. The architecture was similar to that of the Vansi Gopalji temple. The atmosphere was secluded, as in a monastery. Abai was a familiar, welcomed figure there. He had lived here, written and studied in the library here, edited the Gaudiya Patrika, and donated the deity of Lord Chaitanya, who stood on the altar beside the deities of Radha and Krishna, Shishi Radha Vinod Bihariji. During his visit, during September of 1950, his visit during September of 1959 was not an ordinary one. He entered the mat dressed in white, Abai Babu, but he would soon be leaving dressed in saffron, a swami. Abai had been living as a renunciate for 9 years. There was no need for him to observe a ceremony or to proclaim himself a sadhu by changing to saffron dress. But it was the parampara system that a man takes sannyas at the end of his life. He was aware of the cheating sannyasis. Even Vrindavan he had seen so-called sadhus who did not preach but simply spent their days hunting for chapati. Now they spend their days hunting for rupees. Ah, yeah. Some, quote-unquote, swamis of Vrindavan even indulged illicitly in what they had supposedly come here to reject, sex life. Such persons were making a mockery of sannyas. And there were the caste Goswamis also, who lived like ordinary householders, running temples as a business to support their families and accepting honor and donations from the public on the false basis of birth. Abai knew of these abuses of sannyas, but he also knew the real purpose of sannyas. Sannyas was for preaching. On the morning of September 17, 1959, in the 50 by 25 foot deity room on the second floor of the Keshavji mat, a group of devotees sat before the deities of Radha Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. The deities were colorfully dressed in royal clothing and silver crowns. Radharani's right hand faced palm forward in benediction for the worshipper. At her side, her left hand held a flower for Krishna. Krishna stood like a dancer, placing his right leg in a casual tiptoe pose before his left, playing his long silver flute, which he held gracefully to his red lips. His long black hair reached down past his shoulders, and the garland of marigolds around his neck reached down to his knees. On his right stood the deity of Lord Chaitanya, his right arm raised, left arm at his side, his body straight, feet together. He was a soft golden color, and he had large eyes, a well-formed red mouth, and straight black hair down to his shoulders. One level below the deities were pictures of the spiritual masters in disciplic succession, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Bhakti Pragyan Keshava Maharaj. Abai sat on a mat of kushagrass beside 90-year-old Sanatan, also to receive sannyas that day. Sitting opposite the two candidates, Narayan Maharaj, Keshav Maharaj's disciple, prepared to conduct the ceremony of mantras and offerings of grains and ghee into the fire. Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji, Abai's godbrother, known for sweet singing, played mridanga and sang Vaishnav bhajans. Sitting on a raised asan, His Holiness Keshava Maharaj presided. Since there had been no notices or invitations, only the mutt's few residents attended. Narayan Maharaj chanted the required mantras and then sat back silently while Keshava Maharaj lectured. Then, to everyone's surprise, Keshava Maharaj asked Abhay to speak. Abhay had not expected this. As he looked around at the gathering of devotees, he understood that the common language was Hindi. Only Keshava Maharaj and a few others spoke English. Yet, he knew he must speak in English. After Abhay's speech, each initiate received his sannyas danda, the traditional head-high staff made of four bamboo rods bound together and completely enwrapped in saffron cloth. They were given their sannyas garments, one piece of saffron cloth for a dhoti, one for a top piece, and two strips for underwear. They also received tulsi neck beads and the sannyas mantra. Keshava Maharaj said that Abhay would now be known as Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, and that Sanatan would be Muni Maharaj. After the ceremony, the two new sannyasis posed for a photo, standing on either side of their sannyas guru, who sat in a chair. Keshava Maharaj didn't impose any strictures on Abhay. He simply encouraged him to go on preaching. Yet Abhay knew that to become A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami did not mean merely that he was giving up family, home comforts and business that he had done 5 years ago. Changing from white cloth to saffron cloth, from Abhay Babu to Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, had a special significance. It was the mandate he had required, the irrevocable commitment. Now it was only a matter of time before Bhaktivedanta Swami would travel to the West as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had ordained. This was Bhaktivedanta Swami's realization of his new sannyas status. The Gaudiya Patrika's account of the sannyas initiation included a biographical sketch of Sri Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, listing the major events of his life. The article concluded, quote, "Seeing his enthusiasm and ability to write articles in Hindi, English, and Bengali, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj gave him the instruction to take Tridandi Sannyas. For nearly 1 year, he had been ready to accept sannyas. In the month of Bhadra, on the day on which Vishwarup accepted sannyas, Bhaktivedanta Swami at the Sri Keshavji Gaudiya Mutt accepted sannyas from the founder of the Vedanta Samiti, Bhakti Pragan Keshava Maharaj. Seeing him accept his ashram of renunciation, seeing this pastime for accepting the renounced order of life, we have attained great affection and enthusiasm." Hare Krishna. Well, you know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left this world, what was it, January the 1st, 1936, I think, something like that. And he ordered his disciples on numerous occasions, including right at the end, that no one should become like the acharya of the organization in the sense of the head, but that the organization called at that time the Gaudiya Mutt should be managed by a governing body. As far as I'm aware, he even used the term governing body commission. Sometimes we see in, like here, in South Africa and different places, when we as members of the governing body commission, are sometimes introduced at programs where there are people who are not devotees and who are not familiar with ISKCON, some of them perhaps not at all. Sometimes we're introduced as, this is the GBC. How they meant to know what a GBC is, I'm not sure. But anyway, that was the order of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But very soon afterwards, well, actually they formed a governing body. There were some meetings. And even to this day, from what I'm told, like on an annual basis, a few of them get together and they chat and go their ways and continue with their separate programs. But any attempt at actually governing and organizing the whole movement, the whole organization as one unit, it just fell apart very quickly. And very quickly, they tried to find someone who they could appoint as Acharya, as the head, the real head, who, you know, if he had managed to sort of maintain Krishna consciousness sufficiently, he would have been above the governing body. So, unfortunately, the governing body didn't work. Then the Acharya fell down with some woman and then married her, and then later she murdered him. It was, you know, a bit on the extreme side. And there are some, you know, and these, the sannyasis who were like, you know, to some degree leaders, at least of certain groups of devotees here and there, they just separated and formed even their own legal organizations and fought in court and, you know, like fought with words against each other. And in some cases, their followers fought physically with each other. And from what I was told, a few people were killed in these, you know, actual physical fights about who's the leader and who's a nonsense and all this sort of, you know, very emotionally charged talk and in this very heavily emotionally charged atmosphere. And we can see just by reading that letter of Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj, it's 1959, it's 23 years after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta left this world. It's quite a long time. But they're still in this heavy, heavily factionalized state of mind and trying to establish themselves and their group as the group, and trying to establish the other groups through speaking as being wrong and deviant and, you know, just at least worthy of neglect. And it's still going on to this day to some degree. At least the talk's still going on. And when you go to the Chaitanya Mutt in Mayapur, which was the headquarters of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, at the Chaitanya Mutt, of course, Bhaktivilas Tirtha Maharaj has passed away long ago, but they still have a sign at the entrance, the headquarters of the Gaudiya Mission around the world. You know, it's just so unfortunate. Really an illusion. So Srila Prabhupada, seeing it, was just in such a state, he decided he had to go on his own. But in fact, he didn't even immediately decide that. He went to America, and he still wrote to them and asked, you know, please let us cooperate. So I'm developing something here. Things are happening. People are becoming devotees. So can we connect up with you? But nothing of any substance was forthcoming. And then Prabhupada, you know, it became clearer and clearer. He had to actually have his own organization following Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and just separate from any of the, by that time there was no Gaudiya Math, but there was just all the different groups with different names like Vedanta Samiti, the Chaitanya Math group, and they all have their own names now. And establish an international worldwide organization for all of humanity to change the world and really start the progress of making the whole world Krishna conscious. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any comment or question? Yes.
Just in relation to the dreams that Prabhupada had.
Right.
There was a devotee yesterday I was talking to, and he told me that before he had met you or me, uh-huh, and the devotees, he had a dream about them.
Really?
Yes. And he told me in his dream I was wearing the same watch.
Oh.
And then he had met the devotees.
I see.
And these were the same devotees he had dreamt of.
Okay.
And I met another Mataji, disciple of Kadambakanda Maharaj, and she also, before meeting you, she had a dream.
Of me?
Yes.
Wow.
And then she came to a Bhakti Yoga Society program or something, and that was the first time she saw you. Oh. And she said she had had a dream prior, and she had never seen you before.
That's
very interesting.
Interesting. That's what it is. Well, sometimes these things happen. Yeah. Sometimes these things happen. Any comment or question? Sheetala? Srila Prabhupada ki.